everyone, it's Razan Arquette here, your guide for all radical musings. I want to quickly talk about dysfunction. You know, everyone has some sort of dysfunction in their life, right? I mean, I know I do. I mean, talk about dysfunctional. When does shit ever truly go according to plan? Sometimes we just have to look at the humor in our idiosyncrasies, right? I mean, Hello Dysfunction, as in the podcast. Hello Dysfunction. Yup, this series is hosted by two childhood best friends, Pata Fria and Crystal, as they share personal stories of their own dysfunction. Nothing is off limits and everything is funny. They talk about their lives, their view on the news, gossip, politics. This is really good stuff. Check out Hello Dysfunction on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hello, friends. Hope everyone's having a great day. Hopefully today's episode will make it even greater, because today on Radical Musings, I bring you the incomparable, exceedingly talented Randy Rainbow. Randy is a singer and a comedian, and if you don't know who he is, don't even listen to this episode right now, because you got to go log on to @RandyRainbow on Twitter, check out his YouTube channel or Facebook page, and check out his political parodies, because they are brilliant. He is a superstar. I wanted to talk to Randy because I'm a huge fan of his parodies, and I've been a faithful follower on his Twitter feed and asked him to talk to me, and fortunately, he agreed. Unfortunately, the conversation happened just as Amy Coney Barrett was being fast-tracked into the Supreme Court. I was in a real shit mood. But as Randy does, he lifted my spirits immediately. Have a listen. First of all, thank you, Randy Rainbow, for keeping us... Got my mask on here.
I'm not in the room with you. You know, it's all right. You can take the mask.
Keeping us laughing and you know, going with your amazing musical theater pieces that you do about Trump. They're just fantastic. They're really
good. Thank you. Thank you so much, honey.
Is your kitty Sweeney around?
Well, guess what? I guess you didn't see all of the 9 Twitter posts since last night. We had a surprise. Yes, he's here. Well, he is here.
Yeah, Sweeney. What happened?
But we went to the vet yesterday to get booster shots for Sweeney. Uh-huh. And, you know, you drop the cat off now and they call you and the vet talks to you over the phone.
Right.
So she calls me. She goes, everything's great. He gained a pound, blah, blah, blah. And we'll call you in 5 minutes and you can come pick him up. I said, terrific. Then she calls right back and she goes, hi, are you sitting down? I'm like, what? She goes, Sweeney's a girl.
Has Sweeney been fixed?
No, not yet. So the first time I brought her in, she was so tiny they couldn't even tell. So she went to like feel for testicles. Can I say testicles?
Maybe you got to change her name to, you can say anything you want. You can say fuck shit, whatever you want.
Well, I changed her name to fuck shit. And,
Lucy in Sweeney Todd.
Girl, I love you. That was the number one choice. And then I changed it again and I made it, first I went with Sadie. Because Sadie was sort of like, it was like a Barbra Streisand. Of course. And it sort of sounded like Sweeney. Then I woke up this morning and I remembered there was a character in the classic Oz books, the second one, The Marvelous Land of Oz.
Right.
I don't know if anyone knows this reference, but the character was this little orphan boy named Tipitarius, who they call Tip. And Tipitarius, the story is that Mombi, the evil queen, ends up, it turns out that she turned him into a boy, but he's really Ozma, the princess of Oz.
Ozma.
So it's now Tippy because he started as a boy.
What about Ozma?
Ozma's cute too. That's a little gay even for me. So, but I thought Tippy is a cute kitty name. So it's T-I-P-P-I, Tippy.
I love that cat. I just what love
it. Well, so cute.
You spent all this time. You know, we were watching, and then we went into quarantine. And I was watching you in quarantine a lot. Like, okay, how is Randy navigating this time in quarantine other than just figuring out the next song? But, like, I felt like I could actually feel like it was starting to be hard for you.
Oh, really?
Like everybody.
Tell me why, and I'll corroborate.
There were times where I could just...
I mean, yes, but tell me when you noticed
that. I could see it. I just was seeing, like, you know... Although I love the long hair, But there was stuff, there was just more than that. It just felt like there was a depression that was setting in on you a little bit that I could like all of us, like, hello. But I was watching you a lot and I felt it. Was I wrong?
Oh, wow. Well, you're not wrong, because I do, you know, I certainly have bouts of depression regularly. I know it's difficult for people. There are people who just know me from singing show tunes and stuff. So they don't know sort of like the you know how it is.
Is that trauma stuff?
Not on camera. I'm sure, yeah. I haven't been therapized enough to really tell you what it is. But yeah, my father was Donald Trump. So I'm sure that has a lot to do with it.
There you go.
Yeah.
And were your parents not accepting about who you were? How old were you when you decided that you wanted to live your truth and be able to tell that to the world and your parents? How old were you when you knew that?
You mean like came out?
Yeah.
I have not yet come out, so that's very presumptuous of you.
Oh,
shut up, of course.
I'm sorry. I thought you had.
Girl, you know I'm kidding.
No, I am so gullible. I am so gullible because you did a book, I know, Playing With Myself. Yeah.
I didn't do it yet. I'm writing it right now. I'm starting to write it now. So all the answers to this will be revealed. But my mother always knew. My mother, you know, I come from a very liberal, open-minded, show business-y Jewish family.
Right.
So my mother like told me when I was 18 and I was hanging around with this guy named Frank a little more than the other friends of mine. And she just sat me down. She's like, listen, I know. I get it. I know who this Frank is. There's nothing you can tell me that I don't already know about you. And she loved it. You know, she frankly wanted the gayest son she could possibly raise. And she did this to me on purpose. So she would put me to sleep with the scores to Oklahoma and The Music Man. She wanted the gayest musical theater child. So she was, and then my father also was.
I want to thank your mother for this. Thank you. Can you thank her so much? Because you are a gift, and I'm a musical. I know all the musicals by heart. Like, well, I wasn't great. Mostly, of course, like Camelot, West Side Story, Fiddler on the Roof. You know, like all the musicals. I keep thinking about songs for you to do. You know,
like, yes. Well, that's the part that's come so easy to me, because I think like that. Like I think in show tunes, thanks to my mom and my upbringing, and just I just people say like, how do you know which song to put with which situation? And that's the easiest part, because I just, my whole life, I've always found the show tune or musical theater parallel to whatever's going on in my life or on the world stage. It's kind of a defense or a coping mechanism, I guess.
Where were you raised?
Born Long Island, New York, and raised for the most part in South Florida. Florida, see, I still say Florida.
At Florida. And your parents are still there?
My father's no longer with us. He passed away in 2016. He was considerably older than my mom, and my mother is still down in Florida in the Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood area.
Nice. I come from I'm the eldest of five, and we have very liberal, crazy mother Jewish, father Christian. Then they became Muslims, and then my mother decided while she was dying of cancer that I am a Jew and I need to be buried as a Jew. So she's buried as a Jew. And so we had the most wild upbringing, and Alexis Arquette was our sister, trans, mm-hmm. born a boy. And, you know, I think my mother, when, you know, Alexis was, you know, 12 or 11, dressed as Marilyn Monroe for Halloween, there was a moment where my mom was like, oh, you know, she was so liberal and open, but there was a period where she may have shamed in a moment that was like, instead of immediately accepting. And then she became a therapist and really got that, you know, this is how she, of course, you know, and which was really surprising. So Alexis, you know, did you know Alexis Arquette? Do you know?
Not personally, of course, but yes, I'm very familiar with your whole family. I'm a big fan of everyone.
Oh, well, Alexis was it was the saddest thing that ever happened. And
yeah.
Still is for everybody. It's a big wound. But anyway, I just wanted to talk to you about your creativity, your process. You're keeping us all alive and entertained, and we're very grateful for that. What are you going to be doing next? You're writing a book.
I'm writing a book. And I'm sort of, you know, I've always been really organic with my art and my work. And so I'm going to see, I'm kind of in developmental stages of everything. I would like to do what I'm doing sort of on a larger television scale. I would like to do it on a larger theater scale. I had been touring around the country with kind of a concert version of.
Oh, I didn't know that.
For the last 3 years. That. I know you would have had so much fun, but we'll be back and
I have so many musician friends and all my friends in bands, and Coachella that was canceled. And it's really hard on people in the entertainment business. Sometimes I think, did they do this purposely? Like, what is going on here?
I know. It's almost too like horrible to comprehend. And especially, you know, I'm in New York, and to think that Broadway is not happening just down the street for me right now is, it's crazy. And it's just, it's very sad. But I do believe, and I am a pessimist, I do believe that, you know, it will come back and thrive and be bigger and better.
So, and hopefully, you know, yes, more.
And I was doing this live tour, and we actually were talking about a limited engagement on Broadway that would be happening right now. So that's crushing, because that, of course, has always been a dream of mine to play Broadway.
I think that they're going to reinvent for a while, and while we're in this waiting time, and somehow as we're seeing all these actors, you know, doing readings from the old movies and stuff, all that stuff is kind of coming into some kind of form, like, well, okay, what are we seeing here? Which means that you could film with a socially distanced crew, and they're doing that. They're starting to go back to work, and you can perform it and film it and have both, and start looking into doing that right now, because that would be great for you.
They are and I'm having some conversations with some producer friends and some people who have actually approached us with interest about doing something like that while theater is still technically dark.
I think they
see me as a good candidate to, and I do too, to do something, you know, as sort of a, you know, a halftime show or whatever.
Well,
you want to call
it. You've got the Chris. I have an idea here.
What?
We're on something. We might be creating some, like, right now.
What are we going?
Well, you have this Christmas album, Hey Girl, that came out last Christmas. Why don't you film that and make a Christmas special?
That's a really good idea.
Come on, Randy.
That's a good idea.
You're going to film the Christmas special. That's all what's happening here. It's going to be genius.
Well, you're producing it. Let's do it.
I would look like we could find a way to do that. We may very well be able, like, a way to do Randy Rainbow's Christmas, what we need for the new year, please, God. Please, please.
I would love to do that. That was so exciting for me.
That's like a no-brainer right now. Like, right now, we got to, like, get somebody to say, well, yeah, we're making a Randy Rainbow's Christmas special right now. We need that. So I'm already thinking, like, the songs, you know, we have to do.
Well, did you see the guest list on there, the people that I sang with?
Silent Night, and you could do a parody on Silent Night that is like, goodbye to him. Oh, like,
that would be nice. It's so tricky.
That's so great.
That's what I was saying, though. It's like, it's the weirdest time to, like, plan, especially, like, in my line of work, to sort of plan ahead. Because obviously we know what's going to happen.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So it's hard to, like, you know, plan, like, the celebratory stuff and all of that, although you want to. But I was booked in 2016 when I first started to get known for my videos to, you know, headline an election night party at a big gay club in Orlando. So I was there on the stage singing my happy songs, and then it quickly went from a party to a wake. So I'm still a little, have PTSD from that. So I'm like,
horrendous. It was this, yeah. I had all night, I was with a bunch of friends and kept eating, you know, all these amazing cheeses they had from around the world. And then, like, I ended up just on my knees sobbing and, like, vomiting from
stress. Hey, really?
So horrible from the fact that he won. It was like, what is happening here?
It was bizarre. I'll never forget that feeling.
Well, we might have to all just run away. We're, you know, well, we're, no, Joe's getting in. We got it. No matter what, we just have to make this happen. That's all there is.
We'll be all right. We'll do it.
Okay. Whatever happens, we're going to be okay. And all the artist tribes, you know, they'll be rounding us up anyway. And
oh, stop. Don't say rounding is a please.
But scary.
It is scary.
They are behaving that way. They are not allowing peaceful protests. We did all watch a police officer, you know, kill somebody, murder somebody in front of our eyes. And then these guys with guns are like, this is intense. It is intense.
That's
why we need you right now.
That's so sweet. And I
not go down the spiral of negativity. You're not listening to what you're just creating us to be able, because what entertainment always was in the old days was there was a war on, and people were hungry. There was depression. They went into the movie theater, the dark movie theater, and they looked up and saw that. That's what this time is right now.
Yeah.
The artists like you are creating art to keep us okay. So that's your job. And it's like being an avatar. It's a great thing. Thank you.
Well, that's means the world to me. I mean, when people say thank you to me, and I've heard over the last 4 years and especially this last year, thank you more than I ever thought that I would hear that. I mean, my intention has always first and foremost been to just be entertaining and, you know, sing and get some laughs and all of that. But it's really a testament to how, important the arts and humor and, you know, in my opinion, musical comedy in particular, how vital that is and how healing that can be. So, and I also say thank you right back, because, you know, you talk about dipping into depression, which I do, certainly. I think any artist knows what that's like. Yes. And it's been a very depressing time. And it has been challenging for me to sort of, you know, keep my spirits up. And when I think like, oh, I really want to do one of these big musical parodies, but I sometimes don't have it in me that week. And at the same time, it is the one thing that's been keeping me afloat. The fact that I, you know, I'm all contained in my apartment, and I'm a one man band, and I have all of my equipment in the room next door, and I can just do it whenever I want. I do it myself. So it's great. And it's crazy. And but I'm so thankful for it, because what the hell would I have done if I couldn't have been creating this whole time?
It would have been not a good time for
you.
And so art heals.
It's very, very healing. I it's great. And I think the other thing that people are responding to is that I'm just doing stuff that I love. It's all the things that I love. It's music, it's comedy. I'm using a political voice that I didn't know I had. And I think that's what people, you know, what comes from the heart goes to the heart. And I think people are responding to that about my work more than anything. They see this guy who's doing what he loves. And I hope that comes across.
It really does. And so you just keep going, because you have a Christmas show to think about. Let's figure this
That's
out.
Right. Meanwhile, my Jewish mother is going to be like, what about the Hanukkah show?
So there you go.
I'm kidding.
I have a Jewish mother, and I'm Jewish and celebrate, you know, it all. But it just came out of the Jewish New Year, by the way, Shana Tova.
Shania Twaina.
So, but you could do Chrismica.
Absolutely. That's cute. I do want to do more recording. Like, I want to do I'm working kind of in the beginning stages of a next album that's not political parody, maybe a little bit. That's just not Christmas, singer. But just sort of like happy, you know, standard kind of stuff, and big band, like show tunes and stuff like that.
I love it. That's a great, and that also can be done this way in the meantime, before you take it on the road live. But this year, it's going to take us some time. We're going to need to fill that space, and you're the person that could do that.
That's so nice. Well, I'm happy to try at least.
So what's your favorite musical?
This is way too personal. We have to cut. No, it's a hard question, but I guess I always go, I go to Sondheim. So Sweeney Todd,
yeah.
Hence the original name. You do?
I love A Little Night Music. Have you seen or heard the music of that?
Of course I have, but it's not my top.
Really?
top five, I would say.
If you saw it live.
I did with Bernadette Peters. I saw the revival.
And it didn't get you.
Okay. Loved it, but.
I love the opening of that musical. I can't sing very well, but you know.
Do it. I'll know it when you sing it.
So beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, I just love anything Sondheim. So Sweeney Todd and Into the Woods for me.
Into the Woods. Then West Side Story, because that was his first major musical and he wrote all the lyrics.
He did. There you go.
I think that's probably my favorite. I love
And Gypsy.
Gypsy.
If we're counting the collaborations.
What about, did you like Camelot?
Loved Camelot. Again, not my top 10, but I remember my mother took me to see it with Robert Goulet in Florida. And I have very vivid, wonderful memories of it. And I've parodied that song twice.
Have you? Which one?
Camelot. I did.
Oh, Camelot. Recently,
Camelot. And before that.
Of course you did.
And yeah. 2 years ago, I used it for Kavanaugh.
Oh, that's. Oh. Did I miss the Kavanaugh one? That is impossible. Do you know, it was so traumatic in that time, the Kavanaugh hearings, because we were going through the whole Harvey Weinstein stuff and coming out with all that. And then he got in, he became a Supreme Court judge. And as soon as it stopped, and I talked about this yesterday to somebody, I got shingles. So stressful. All of this with, and you just, this misogyny, and we're seeing it just even today, you know, or it was the sealed records that were unsealed, but they've redacted all the stuff from the Jeffrey Epstein stuff and the girls and the people that are in there and the names are all gone. And it's the misogyny that we're seeing, of course, is like overwhelming, triggering if you come from any kind of parent that was oppressive like that. And we're seeing it now, like, wow, you're gonna take away our rights? Are you, like, now? What? For our kids, all the young people? So it's an obligation to the artist right now to bring these things to the forefront in a way where everyone can understand it and heal from it. And that's what you're doing.
Well, it's interesting when you talk about if you come from that kind of, you know, father, I guess, specifically, and it's triggering for you. Like I said, my dad really was Trump, just in his mannerisms. He was, you know, textbook narcissistic and certainly, you know, abusive verbally and emotionally. And I saw, I think almost part of the reason that I'm able to kind of spoof him or take him on in the way, whatever way I do, as you know, if I do it well, I think it's because I know that animal, you know, that's to me, it's like a specific kind of, like, not to paint with a broad brush, but he's, you know, like a specific kind of New York asshole that what my father was. So much so that my father, who was not at all an introspective man and would never otherwise say this, he was dying during the election of 2016. And he even said, I can't watch the television because he reminds me too much of myself. And so we were like, oh, yeah, wow, that's.
Was he, what did he do for a living? How were you raised?
He was multiple things. He was a musician. He was a drummer. Toward the end of my life, my life, we haven't gotten there yet. Toward the end of his life, he was, you know, his last job was as a talent agent, supplying talent into all the condo circuit in South Florida.
You became the artist.
Yeah.
You became the artist and he saw that in you and was jealous.
He was definitely jealous. That was an eye opener for me because I couldn't understand as a kid, and it is so painful to feel the kind of negative, you know, response I would get from him. Before we say this, he was not a complete monster. He loved me. And he, you know, for the most part, even though he acted surprised, for instance, when I came out, he ultimately was totally accepting and was a champion of mine, ultimately, but was so damaged as a person that you couldn't escape these flaws of his and the abuse that he just sort of heaped on everyone who crossed his path.
I grew up with a father and a mother like this. So both of them.
I'm lucky. I had the mother that who was the polar opposite of that and was nothing but nurturing and wonderful. So I can't imagine a situation like yours.
Well, but my mother, they also were like incredible and loving and kind and the most amazing activists, but they had their own childhood trauma damage that was really overwhelming for both of them. And then they acted out. And at some point we have to break the pattern. Somebody's got to just break the pattern, but it's like generational abuse. It can just happen. Then you see it in the relationships you choose to like, we seek the teeth to match our wounds, which is a Kynan thing. But I love that. We do. We seek the teeth.
What is that? I love that too. I never heard that.
We seek the teeth to match.
To match our wounds. But where does that come from?
So it's Kenneth Tynan. It was a statement he made. It was, and I've always loved that, but it's true. You see it in your relationships. Like, oh God, you are like the abandoning angry father thing, or you're the mother that was a child beater, and we end up choosing those things to ultimately heal them.
Heal ourselves, right? It fucks you up your whole life.
That's a lot of years of working through shit, and my mother being a therapist, and going to lots of therapy, and trying to continuously work on yourself to be a better human being. When you're an asshole.
Yeah, it's rough. And the jealousy thing was the hardest thing because it didn't compute that like a father would respond that way to a son. But I remember like my mother and my grandmother, who essentially raised me and were my best friends growing up, would mention, especially my grandmother would say, "He's jealous. He's jealous of you." And I didn't understand that until recently. I think he really was.
I got it in my family with my father, and my mom was, I found fan letters that she wrote that were really beautiful and great. And so she was super supportive of my work, but it was my dad that was had that kind of stuff. But then people would tell me like when he was like, your father was telling us, and he was so proud of me out in the world with his friends or other people that he'd meet, but he didn't do that with me. And I just remembered like just being so wounded by that, and so I didn't get that.
It's rough. It's rough. Yeah. Anyway, I mean, we could be here all day. I need to be in much more therapy. I've sort of just kind of just started, but it's going to be years. Let's check back in like a decade.
But you know what it is? It's just the fact of you could just also read so many books and just understand, and you work through things yourself. And then just like, maybe just taking a healing writing class or something, and then you can just kind of write all this stuff out with that kind of workshop that's working through grief. And you know who's doing that? Hmm. Is Tarana Burke. Tarana Burke, her Me Too movement, she has a whole program in there to heal trauma. And you may find that will be, it might be a great place for you, may not, but I like the idea that she's doing this and it's helping so many people. And, she's the Me Too movement she's our queen. She's the person that started it before we came out. And then it was great that it got to elevate her great movement that is doing so much to heal people in the world from trauma now. It's awesome.
That's fabulous. Talk about important work.
So, Randy, how did you hone into your craft?
You know what? Like I said, it's just me. I'm just doing things that I love, and it's all been very experimental. I didn't do this the conventional way. I didn't move to New York and start, pounding the pavement and doing cattle calls and auditioning like that. Frankly, I was too scared to do that. As a 21, 22-year-old, I kind of just had to... I told myself, I'm just going to learn how to, be a human a little bit first. I'm just going to throw myself into a big city and see what happens. But I started just working in restaurants and eventually offices and, Broadway production offices, and then started writing, and then got a little bit of an audience when I was writing, and decided to go back to my original roots, which were on the stage and theater, which I did as a kid, basically. And I just, you know, I've just been throwing all the things that I love into the cauldron, comedy and music and pop culture and all of this. And so I guess I've, you know, I don't, there's not like a specific kind of formula that I've had. It's just been doing stuff that I love over and over again.
So we're talking to this program is called Radical Musings. And I'm sitting here thinking as soon as you start talking, it's like, I have many, many, many musician friends that are all my, like, this is my favorite thing is to talk to artists about their process. It's, yes. I used to do all the backstage interviews for Coachella for many years. And like, I love hearing some, right when you were talking, I got, because we were talking earlier about therapy, that is the musical you're writing. That's your musical, is your... What? Your self-discovery of this little boy who could have musical and have theater, could have songs, and yeah. His coming and the father,
yeah,
all your childhood written in a musical form to where you are now, and discovering that those shadows, you know, that you see in your are affecting you now, and put that into theater.
Well, I think you're really hitting the mark, and my plan and hope is that writing this book that I've just kind of started playing with myself, due out next year, I hope that's going to be both cathartic and also going to be a lot of kind of discovery, and a lot of that, the story of that is going to come out, because there is a story.
Now you just have to write the music and get the right person that is, it writes the music to, because that's the musical,
right?
Performing that, playing with myself, it's a huge hit.
Produced by Rosanna Marquez. No, with the companion Christmas special.
Yeah, I love it. I'm excited.
No, I think, I mean, there is, to me, that's the most important part of my story, is this little bullied kid who was bullied on the playground, who didn't fit in, who felt like a stranger in his own house. And I found comfort and stability and joy in musical theater and show tunes. And I used music and comedy to get me through tough times. And now here I am all these years later. And I'm doing that on sort of a larger, with a platform.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of just, you know, using those tools to sharing them, I hope, with the world at a time when the country's getting bullied on the playground.
Yay.
So it's really a very full circle thing.
Okay, so I just got another thing that just came when I got so excited I was going to tell you.
Oh, good. This is a great session.
Have you done anything with Sumi? Sumi, what can you do me?
No.
Yes!
What made you think of that, though? That's a good one.
Guys and Dolls. Because you're talking about... Because musicals that you liked, and you were talking about it. Like I'm so ADDs, but everything goes so fast, so I have all these things in my head so fast. Like a cartoon sometimes is too much. And I that's why I was getting all excited, because I wanted to say it because it's going to go and I'm going to forget it. But
that's a good one. But were you thinking about just Trump in general, or
about musical theater and when you were young and how it was, you know, life-saving, and this was, you knew you were doing something you loved. And I was thinking all the musicals that you loved as a kid. And I said, what are Guys and Dolls? Sumi. It just came to me.
But that's on my list. I have a running list.
Now we bought it, because this guy and their family is going to be sued. They're going to be sued all over the place.
Well, that's the other funny thing. I do have a running list, and you know, like, of course, there's like a Trump section that's very prominently, you know, a part of it. And I keep thinking, and I've been thinking for the last 4 years, like, if he's voted out, like, there's stuff that I won't be able to do, or, you know, people always ask me in my Q&As, like, if he's not in office anymore, you're not gonna.
Thank God. You know what?
We're gonna. Thank God.
He's gonna be erased.
I hope so. But here's my fear about that. I know I don't need him. I know that, like.
You don't.
There's whatever everyone's talking about, I'm happy to lampoon.
Why don't you just get rid of him? Like, let's do a funeral. Like enough of his presidency. And
But the scary thing, though, Rosanna, is I am afraid that he's going to, even when he is elected, when he is, you know, kicked out of the office, the Oval Office, he's still going to be a prominent fixture. And, you know, I'm still probably going to end up parodying him for the next 2 years because he's probably still going to have him in the forefront.
You won't do it. You'll do it twice a year and it'll be insane. Like I hope. You're going to be so busy doing your own stuff that it is your voice, your thing, and it's going to be. This was the platform for the jumping point for Randy Rainbow to come out and do your work that you can find the right. Do you write your own stuff? Are you a musician? Do you play the piano? Can you write?
Not at all. I write all the lyrics and I'm musical, but I don't read music or anything.
You just have to find that composer that matches with you where you're become the new, Sondheim and someone else.
Sondheim and someone else. I love that. Well, yeah, I hope that.
Sondheim
away.
Or maybe even Sondheim himself.
He is a personal friend, excuse me.
What? So what?
Yes.
What do you guys do song together? I want to call him up and tell him to do a song with you. You guys got to write something together.
Well, all right. Well, you call him. But he did when I played the Beacon here in New York. He was right there in the front row sitting next to my mother, as was Stephen Schwartz.
Oh, come on. So that's Godspell.
Yes. And on my Christmas album, Mark Shaman. Mm-hmm. The legendary, who wrote, of course, Hairspray and everything else. Yeah. He wrote with me. We collaborated and wrote the title track for that. So that was sort of my first musical.
Touching Myself is your new musical. I'm sorry. I've got Rudy Giuliani on my brain.
Don't get me started. I will leave this meeting.
But how about Sacha Baron Cohen? We got to give some, come on.
Did you see the scene by now?
I only saw parts of it. I haven't seen it all yet. I don't know why I haven't. Is it out yet? I thought it was coming.
I think today. Yeah, but I saw. I don't know if what I saw on Twitter was the full scene.
Right.
But it was so much creepier than I had anticipated. I'm really nauseous.
Yeah, it's they're all pretty creepy. They just We're not going to end. Wait.
I didn't mean to take us in that direction.
Yeah, but I did. Okay. I said.
Yeah, you started it.
I started it. I'm sorry. Yeah, I have a tendency to go to the dark parts of the world, going and seeing like all this madness and craziness. But and then, I walk the tightrope of, trying to stay in the real positive and then going down the toilet of negative.
I love it. I'm right there with you.
So I'm playing with myself with the new musical that's going to be coming out after the book.
After the book. And I want to do a companion album with that too. That's my idea because how I tend to double up my vocals on my videos and I am my own chorus often in my own videos.
I
want to do something. I work with my musical director, Jesse Kissel, who works with me on tour. I want him to do all these like fun, crazy, like 4 or 5 part harmonies to just sort of standard classic show tunes that I will just sing with myself and it'll be playing with myself the album.
I like, but also going and talking to your friend, Stephen Sondheim and even Stephen Schwartz, both of them, telling that you're doing this musical, I would think it's important. And I would say to them, Sondheim, let's write a song called Playing Myself Together.
Can you imagine if that's the song I wrote with Sondheim playing with myself?
That can happen. And yes, it should happen. And I bet he would be honored and want to do it. I think it could be great. Playing with myself, a Sondheim and Randy Rainbow song. Let's go. I'm in.
All right. All right. From your lips, honey. And then you'll have to come sing and do it too. Do you sing like?
No, I'm not a singer, but what I was always told was that I had pitch and I can't, but it's not like a beautiful voice. It's just kind of very little girly, but I could have done like Glynis Johnsy, Send in the Clowns. Yeah. I can hold a tune, but
I've never had a musical like you.
Huh?
Have you done a musical?
Never, but it was always my dream. But can you do your ABC, like a scale, and let's see if I can do it.
ABC scale?
The scales of music right now. Like, I don't know.
I'm so not warmed up in any way. Just, you want me to?
Yeah, because I need to do it. I'm going to try to do it so that you do it and then I do it. No, that was terrible. See?
Mine's worse. I can't even perform right now. I should have warmed up for you. No. But I think you should do a musical.
I would love to do a musical. Well, when I was a kid, there was a show. So I grew up around this, and I wanted to revive this, and you would be so perfect in this. The whole family could do it. And we've been talking about it. But when I was growing up, there was a show on Broadway called Story Theater. It was Paul Sills Story Theater. And it was the Grimm fairy tales done in a very avant-garde, just beautiful stage. Valerie Harper was in it, Dick Stahl, Richard Libertini. And my dad was in it. So Hamilton Camp was my godfather. So there was the first tiers, the Broadway, and it won Tony. And like Clive Barnes thought it was like the most amazing thing he'd ever seen. So I wanted to revive that now. And it's fairy tales, Randy.
I love that. That's great. Right up my alley.
And what they did was they used rock and roll music in it. So go look it up. It's called Story Theater. And go, and you can get an album of it. You might be able to find
it. Why don't I know about this?
You're going to frick. But the music they used is like George Harrison and Bob Dylan. And so, but anyway, I was talking to the daughter, who's a friend of mine, Polly Sills, about reviving this and figuring out a way. And there was a way, because my whole family knows that we were raised, you know, improvisation for the theater, Viola Spolin. Do you ever read the book Improvisation for the Theater? And it's called Viola Spolin wrote it, and that's her son who directed it, Paul Sills. So we grew up with like improvisation and stuff, the whole Arquette family.
Well, I'm not surprised by that. But is everyone in the Arquette family like a musical theater kind of nerd like you are?
I think everybody could do anything. That's what I think, that I wouldn't put anything past. I mean, I know Patricia sings a mean karaoke of, what was it? I can't remember the song, but it was so good. And now I this is my old lady brain that forgot. But anyway, yeah.
Well, Patricia is constantly, I remember her a few times commenting on some of the songs that I put out and would like specifically talk about the musical that it came from or something. And I remember thinking, oh, she's a music theater person. I love that.
Yeah, the whole family.
That's great.
I remember you listen to West Side Story all the time. I had West Side Story playing in the car. And I think, you know, that's why Sondheim's your guy. I think Sondheim is writing Playing With Myself. I really want you to make that phone call. We did a Zoom call, and I just kind of, I said it, and I made you call him and say it. And I'll take the blame.
I'm going to have him call your offices and you can have the discussion, but I'll set it up.
Offices. Jesus.
I don't know.
You know where I am?
Where are you?
This is a place, this is the audio up. It's a studio, but where it is Elizabeth Montgomery from Bewitched Old House.
Shut the hell up right now.
Bewitched little office room. And this, so when I first came, there's a little stair, but like, I felt like someone shoved me. And I was like, and then they told me it was Elizabeth Montgomery's house. And I kind of hurt my head. I said, oh, I need to say thank you. And I need to say, is it okay for us to come in your house? And since I've been doing that, it's been so awesome.
Oh my God.
You should have said. But at first she was a little like, get the fuck out of my house. What is happening here?
Did you feel that? You should have called Dr. Bombay and why didn't you say Dr. Bombay? Emergency, come right away. Maybe he would have helped.
Yes. Right?
That's so cool. I loved her so much. Oh my God.
Yeah, so that's fun. I want you to tell me how you see life on Earth in the next year.
Oh God.
And that's a big responsibility. I'm
Rosanna.
Sorry.
You know what? Are we being positive now, or we're just sort of guessing?
Exactly what, yes, we are. Because rainbow is positive.
That's right. I think that I think it's going to get a little worse before it gets better, but we will have been here before, so we will muddle through. And I am seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. So
yes.
After this winter, I think if we can just muddle through, it's going to start coming back. And once it does, see, I'm gearing up for when things really start coming back and the high that we're all going to feel.
That we're united.
I can't imagine that this, we will not come out of this united and grown and just, and better and more of a community and more loving. We have to, right? So I'm looking forward. I sincerely look forward to that part of this.
Okay. Well, I,
but I don't know. We could all blow up tomorrow. No, I'm sorry. No, I was just kidding.
We might all, you know, be bombed with the nuclear thing from Russia. I understand, but no, we're not going there.
Or we could all just watch the Rudy Giuliani scene and just die of shock and embarrassment and disastrous humiliation.
And know that they all participate, and that is the truth. That's the deal. So we're getting rid of these guys. It's time for light. It's time to go somewhere over the rainbow, okay? And thank you so much.
Honey, I love you. I love you. I love you. Thank you so much for having
me. Please promise me that you're going to make that phone call. I have a feeling. I'm good at this.
I will. Okay. I will. Next time we talk, okay. I'll bring Sondheim with me.
I'm going to have them send you my cell.
Anytime. Yeah, please. Okay. Let's stay in touch, please.
Lots of love to you.
Bye, honey. Bye. Thank you.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening. Be sure to rate and review Radical Musings to help other listeners find the show, and subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast to be alerted every time we post a new episode. Radical Musings is brought to you by Audio Up, produced by Krista Liney and Carla Braun, edited by Jeremiah Zimmerman, production support provided by Ashley Ardent, Sam Winter, Tyler Dorson, Emma Rappold, and Richard Regal. Thank you all so much. Ooh, la, la. Audio Up.